Trump says to the Tate brothers, you're on your own. I mean, Trump's got enough self-induced problems, and the list is growing, by the way. So, here's what you need to know about today.
There's no single solution when all these other equations come in. This is a headache. Even a chess player would be thinking, oh my God.
And I think you're going to see changes in the way this war is being conducted. I think new target sets will emerge. The Russians will destroy some things they haven't in the past. And I think movement will accelerate.
We began to explain to the American people that Donald Trump is a con artist, and the presidency of the United States will never be held by a con artist.
It's amazing when you think about it, but you know who's saying those same words now? The Iranians. The Iranians. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. So many millions of you have started watching us on a regular basis, and we just want you to know that we're very appreciative for having you there. The Iranians are once again calling President Trump's bluff. As far as they're concerned, he's lied to them, he's backstabbed them, he's reneged on agreements just way, way, way too many times to ever be believed again. That's why they don't even want to negotiate. The list is so long, and you probably know most of this stuff, right? I mean, it's like, kind of like we all do, right? It involves bombing the country in the middle of negotiations while pretending to be negotiating, assassinating the country's top general and the top diplomat, Soleimani, killing the country's spiritual leader, deploying envoys who actually work for or report to or at the behest of Israel, however you want to see it or phrase it, while pretending to be negotiating in good faith for the United States. So, as far as the Iranians are concerned, Mr. Trump is a con man. It all but said it. And who else thinks the president is a con man? Well, here's his own Secretary of State at the time talking about that very thing, using that very word during a previous campaign. Listen to it.
We began to explain to the American people that Donald Trump is a con artist. We are going to send the message that the party of Lincoln and Reagan and the presidency of the United States will never be held by a con artist.
By the way, Trump never wanted Rubio to be a Secretary of State, but Netanyahu wanted him to be the Secretary of State. So guess who won that argument? Who's the Secretary of State? Marco Rubio. Big problem for Trump, as your mother once warned you, and mine too, by the way, is that, remember, your mom probably told you the same thing my mom told me. Son, whenever you lie, it makes you have to create another lie. With each lie, with each distortion, with more lies are than needed, which only creates bigger problems than you originally had with your first lie. And you know what that's called when it comes to regional war, when you keep trying to up things up and you just mess it up more? It's called uncontrollable escalation. Uncontrollable escalation. And over the weekend, things got worse. There was more uncontrollable escalation. Now, Yemen, I'm sure you read this in the headlines if you were watching the news over the weekend. I know some people check out. We all try to, but it's impossible. Yeah, the Yemenis started attacking the Saudis. They attacked Saudi Arabia. The Houthis are now attacking Saudi Arabia, blocking their ships, their tankers. Here's former British MI6 agent and European Union diplomat Alistair Crook. This is a really smart guy. Listen to how he explains where there is now essentially, because of all this escalation, no solution.
The point I'm making here, there's no single solution when all these other equations come in. What solves the equation with Iran will not necessarily solve the equation between the Yemenis and Saudi Arabia, who are now seemingly entering an open war between the two. The equation between Iran and Trump will not solve the question of the Hashad and the Iraqi situation. The equation between Iran and Trump will not resolve the situation of Shara in Syria and his relationship with Lebanon that U.S. is trying to turn into some sort of attack on Hezbollah through the neighboring Shi'i villages that lie just on the borders between Lebanon and Syria. And so now everything is interrelated, but also has its separate agendas. I mean, this is a headache. Even a chess player would be thinking, oh my God, how do I put all of that together into a single composite?
So for Mr. Trump, and you might say for all of his other possible virtues, he is no chess player, right? We know that. He may be a lot of other things, but he's not a chess player. His latest move is just quit. He quit this past Friday after once again trying to bomb Iran into the Stone Ages, quote, unquote, for 12 consecutive days and nights. The attacks just stopped. The Pentagon suspended airstrikes late Friday. No new U.S. attacks have been reported over the weekend. So did the U.S. suspend the attacks because they finally got Iran to say, we give up, we give up, we stop, we'll do whatever you want? No, no, quite the opposite. In fact, even the pro-war, pro-Israel team of so-called journalists at the New York Times is writing this headline about Iran's retaliation and the damage that it has done to the U.S. military in the region. And let me tell you something. It is substantial damage because we're talking about the play. Here, let me show you. Let me show you what they've actually done. We've put a map together so that you can actually see the areas that have been hit. These three areas are the areas where the United States was going to stage what was a ground invasion into Iran. Doesn't look like they're going to be able to do that anymore. These three areas, these are the places that have been devastated. Military installations have been devastated. U.S. military installations is what we're talking about. We'll start with Bahrain, which is probably one of the most important parts in all of this. Look at Bahrain right there, okay? So there's an air base there. There were two, actually, that were hit, but one big one that was hit with a swarm of drones, and they say like 50% of them got through. The command headquarters, all but destroyed. Warehouses were blown up. Satellite communications in the Bahrain units were left essentially inoperable. The other place that's been hit is Kuwait, just above that, at the very tip at the end of the Persian Gulf, as you see right there, right? And there were aircraft hangars were gone, fuel storage bunkers gone, the radar and satellite systems were knocked out, logistics warehouses were also taken out. Now, remember, these are places where the United States had troops, and they were planning to use these to possibly stage an attack to go into Iran. And then, of course, the MacDaddy, when it comes to the U.S. vassal in this region is Jordan. And there it is right above me right there. See that? That's the Muwafaq Salti Air Base, right, which was created essentially for the defense, partially destroying the infrastructure and the perimeter, the logistics center. So, I mean, that's what we're told. We're told it was a partial destruction of the logistics center and most of the base. So, I mean, as you look at what they did in Jordan and what they've done in Bahrain, the Iranians, and what they've done in Kuwait, in the places from where the United States was going to stage its troop movement, its boots on the ground, as we always say, to go into Iran, that may have something to do with why all of a sudden Friday the United States called off the attacks. So ask yourself then, is it a mission accomplished for the United States after restarting its attacks on Iran? Or is it something very different that we're seeing happening? The evidence on the ground seems to suggest that Iran has once again stood its ground, right? And if nothing else, it's not to say they're winning or anything like that. Some people do say that, though. What it's shown is that it can handle just about everything that the United States military throws at them. Then there's Ukraine, where the Russian government seems to be showing signs of a change in strategy in its war with NATO. Because NATO has been urging its proxy, Ukraine, to hit further and further deep strikes into Russia, including attacks on Russian oil refineries, Russia, through the weekend, retaliated in a big way. It destroyed much of Ukraine's smart intelligence systems. They hit major manufacturers in Kiev, where unmanned aerial vehicles are produced. Electronic navigational systems are there, the batteries used for those systems. And they also had secret long-range drone sites, including U.S.-linked production facilities that were manufacturing as many as 1,000 aerial vehicles in a month. And then finally, Russia also hit a drone technology exhibition. Russia used ballistic missiles to strike some high-profile defense event on the outskirts of Kiev that was supposedly showcasing its ability to make drones to attack Russia with. So Russia saw they had this exhibition showing the world how they can make drones to attack Russia, so they took out the exhibition. But let me tell you what the real change is. The real change in Russia's strategy, according to Doug McGregor, who is one of the smartest military minds out there, and is the way he sees it, the real change is how Russia will now choose the person who will lead the war against Ukraine. Now, remember this name. Ready? Surovikin. Remember that name, Surovikin, General Sergei Surovikin. He is known for exemplary work in Africa recently. But before that, he was known for turning things around in the Russian military in Ukraine by creating what is still called the Surovikin Line, a massive multi-layered network of Russian military defensive fortifications in southern and eastern Ukraine that's complete with trenches and bunkers and anti-tank obstacles and minefields. And it apparently, at the beginning of this war, stopped the Ukrainian military's encroachment. Cold. Well, this guy, Surovikin, is now being called back to lead the charge, right? So here's Colonel Doug McGregor. He joined me on a live stream that we did after my show that I did from the Kremlin last Thursday. Here's what he says about this.
I see the return of General Surovikin from Africa, where he's been for the last few years, as a very positive sign. Surovikin was the one who back in 2022 and then 2023 had an enormous impact at the strategic level on the decisions to fight and how to fight. He established this strategic defense and then invited the Ukrainians, badly advised by us, by the way, to impale themselves on this defense in depth. With this man, Surovikin, he understands this linkage, this ISR strike capability, how to employ it operationally as well as tactically. And I think you're going to see changes in the way this war is being conducted. I think new target sets will emerge. The Russians will destroy some things they haven't in the past. And I think movement will accelerate.
Let's switch the topic to what everybody's talking about in the United States, Andrew and Tristan Tate. You remember I interviewed them at the time. Well, they have now appeared before a judge in shackles and in handcuffs and barring intervention from above. And I don't mean from God, I mean from Donald Trump. At least that's the way they're seeing it right now. It looks like they're heading to jail in the UK. Trump administration officials, including his spokesperson and his Secretary of State, have both said that the Tates are pretty much on their own. Despite their apparent friendship with Barron Trump, the White House officials are saying we're staying out of that whole thing. My take? Mr. Trump has realized that he has way, way too many problems already without taking on another one, especially one that involves rape and the exploitation of minors. British prosecutors appear to be throwing the book at the Tates. Unfortunately for the Tates, they themselves may be their own worst enemies. What am I talking about? Well, I'm going to play something for you now. Here is a sampling of the Tates' own statements over the years. And when you hear this, you're going to think, my God, that lines up exactly with what the accusations against them are. Here, listen for yourself.
I was all about trying to get paid. Like my I used sex as a tool to make women love me so they'd obey me and live in my house and make me money. That's what I wanted. So I was a pimp in that sense.
I learned every tip and trick it takes to make sure a girl gets paid. I know how to make sure the girl can't run away.
On CorporateTape.com, I have my PhD program, and that is PhD is a pimp and hose degree.
Yeah, see what I mean? By the way, there's a lot more of that out there, and you can bet that the prosecutors are going through it right now as we speak, and they're going to likely play this stuff in court. Yeah, it begs the question, doesn't it? Why would you say those things? Right? Why would you say those things and not expect some kind of backlash? Also, why did they go to Miami knowing that the UK has a reciprocity agreement with the United States? The talk in legal circles right now is that the Tates are going to be extradited, and they will likely face the possibility of life in prison. When we come back, I'm going to be reminding you of something that was said by John F. Kennedy before he was killed. He wanted to make peace with the Soviets, with the Soviet Union. He said, Russians are not our enemies. And then he was killed. Roger Waters is going to be joining me to talk about that. The Roger Waters, by the way. Don't forget to check us out on all the different socials. You can find us on X, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Spotify. I like BitChute. BitChute's announcing a new and unique initiation for you. Check it out. It's at BitChute.com. We will be right back. So welcome back. I want to play something for you. This is what you're going to see here is John F. Kennedy speaking at the commencement ceremony at American University and suggesting that we need to stop with all these wars. Now, think about when he was saying this, right? 1963, right? Talking about making friends with our enemies, including the USSR. He said the Russians should be and can be our friends. Watch.
We are both devoting massive sums of money to weapons that could be better devoted to combat ignorance, poverty, and disease. We are both caught up in a vicious and dangerous cycle, with suspicion on one side breeding suspicion on the other, and new weapons begetting counterweapons. In short, both the United States and its allies, and the Soviet Union and its allies, have a mutually deep interest in a just and genuine peace and in halting the arms race. Agreements to this end are in the interests of the Soviet Union as well as ours.
Back then, you'd have to almost, pardon me, you'd have to almost be crazy to talk about making peace with the Soviet Union. But here he was doing just that. Joining me now to talk about this is Roger Waters. Because of his work with Pink Floyd. He was inducted into the U.S. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's also in the U.K. Music Hall of Fame. But these days, as you probably know, he's known as much or more for his outspokenness, for his sense of, well, common sense political activism. And it's a pleasure to be able to welcome him back. Roger Waters, how are you, my friend? I hope you're well.
Hey, Ray.
So, what do you think of that? I played that because I thought about you, because I watched you the other day when you were talking to Carl, to Tucker, our mutual friend, and you said when you first watched that, and whenever you've watched it since, it almost has an effect on you. What is that effect?
Well, that the man was speaking those great words of wisdom. It was on June the 10th. I remember it well, you know. And, of course, they killed him a few months later. They killed him in November, same year. Why did they kill him? At least partially because he expressed his sentiments about peace on earth and goodwill to men. And he expressed it very, very openly. And he said, this is more important than the ruling elite making trillions of dollars. And unfortunately, we have... A, they killed JFK, obviously. And by the way, wouldn't it be nice to have an investigation into that that wasn't led by Foster Dulles, like the Warren Commission was, you know, where they decided that somehow he got the back of his head blown off backwards from some Russian bloke in a book depository 200 yards behind the guard. So obviously that story is absurd. But anyway, let's not go into that. But we need to talk about peace on earth and goodwill to men. So we need to look, I just listened to your previous stuff about Ukraine and about the ongoing war in the Middle East and so on and so forth. And the ruling elites have driven us now down a path where we are extremely close to the end of everything. I wrote a song about it called Two Suns in the Sunset. I'm talking about nuclear war. Unfortunately, Trump is demented, as we know. And this is a guy with his finger somewhere near a button. Whether he knows what the button does or not is anybody's guess. So we live in extremely dangerous times. And obviously, JFK's speech on June the 10th, 1963, still rings very true and is still deeply important. So for an Englishman like me, who lives in a tiny, almost irrelevant island now, just off the coast of Europe, to hear European Union leaders rattling their sabers, starting to talk about raising 5% of GDP in Germany so that we can rearm the Germans so they can go to war, is effing insane.
Yeah.
And we know it to be so. But it's what most of their political careers are built on, is this nonsense, which is why it's so important that we, the people, including all the Americans and all the Russians and the rest of us who believe in peace on earth and goodwill to men, raise our voices and say, no, this ship is steering for the rocks. So we, the people, have to stand up and say, no, Rick, I know you know this.
Let me ask you a question about Iran, because you and I are, we're guys who lived through a lot of this stuff. You and I have seen Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan and everything in between. But Iran looks different to me somehow. Some people are saying that's good because it'll be the end of the hegemony. Other people are saying no because the hegemony gets desperate and they'll do desperate measures. Where are you on, as you've watched this whole Iran debacle, if I can use that word?
Well, sadly, either of those two outcomes are possible. Isn't it interesting that Iran was one of the seven countries that Wesley Clark, in conversations with Paul Wolfowitz, or one of the other neocons, you know, at the beginning of the new American century, said, we are going to destroy seven countries in 5 years.
Yes.
And after their Pearl Harbor, which was 9/11, they set out to do that. And it's taken them a lot longer than they thought, but we're down to the last two on that list. And the last two are Lebanon and Iran.
Yeah.
Iran, though, is a very different kettle of fish from Somalia and Syria and Libya and all the other countries. There are 90 million Iranians, and it's an ancient civilization. And as we've seen in the face of the despicable attack by the State of Israel and the United States of America on Iran on the 28th of February this year, the Iranian people have, since that moment and since they assassinated their leader, they have stood absolutely shoulder to shoulder. And any opposition to the government, to the Islamic Republic of Iran, within the borders of that country, is no longer there. Okay? They are united. And they will stay united. You know, one of the things about Iran that I mentioned to people, because I only discovered it recently, there's one thing that's illegal in Iran that is not illegal anywhere I've ever lived, and that is lending money for profit. It used to be called usury.
Yeah.
And if there's any Christians out there listening, as I recall, Jesus threw the money lenders out of the temple. I don't read the Bible much because I'm an atheist myself, but that was a very cool thing that Jesus did back then. So I think that's one thing that they've got against the Iranians. And we have to stand solidly with our brothers and sisters in Iran and support them in their resistance to these to appalling attacks upon them. Israel and the United States.
It's funny.
I mean, I heard you talking earlier about Ukraine.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, you just reminded me of somebody. There was a man I once knew. His name was Tom McGrath. He was one of the greatest. He was my English teacher at Morehead State University in Minnesota when I was first going to school there. And you just made me think of him because he, too, was an atheist. And he stood up one day and he said, I'm going to bring you the two greatest books ever written, class. And in one hand, he had the Bible. And in the other hand, he had the complete works of William Shakespeare. And he says, these are the two greatest books ever written. You should read it completely and you should understand it. And he, too, was quoting the Bible oftentimes in class, and he was an atheist. So the virtues that you just mentioned are very important, but they don't work anymore, at least not. They do among the common folk, but they don't work amongst the people who are supposed to be in charge of making our lives better. It seems like they're making our lives worse in the UK, in Germany, in France, in the United States of America. Who are these people and who has so corrupted them? How the hell has this happened, Roger?
Well, I think it's when we started making big wooden boats back in the 15th century and filling them with big metal guns. We, white Europeans, we then sailed all over the world stealing, raping, pillaging. It was called imperialism and it was called colonialism. Mm-hmm. And we are responsible for it, we Europeans. The United States is just a little new blip of that same political philosophy, that the people who've lived somewhere for 10 or 20 or 30 or 50,000 years are ripe for the picking. And that's what we've done. And unfortunately, we see from the policies of the European Union now that that mindset is still there. It's definitely still in the United States of America. It explains the Monroe Doctrine, but it explains also the neocons' vision for the new American century, for a hegemonic, unipolar world where America rules and runs everything and steals everything. Hmm. Particularly now that the United States of America has understood how important cobalt and lithium and other precious minerals under the earth that are not gold are. It's not just oil now. It's all the rest of it. So there is another message out there, which is in the camp that I adhere to. And that you mentioned your mother earlier.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was she was an atheist, but she was a deeply moral person. And her life was entirely ruled by a moral compass. And when I was a young teenager one day, she said to me, Roger, when you're faced with any problem, and like we might be faced with a problem in Ukraine or in West Asia or whatever, the problem of perpetual war, she said, I want you to read everything that you can find about the subject. And don't just read things that agree with your point of view. Read everything and talk to other people. Read and talk. When you've done that, you've done all the heavy lifting. The hard work is over. And I said, oh, really, Mum, what do I do then? And my mum said, oh, the next bit's easy. You do the right thing. Well, there is a right thing to do about all these military conflicts that we're seeing. Stop.
Yeah. You know,
stop doing the wrong thing.
You were talking a little while ago about the project.
Sorry.
You were talking a little while ago about the project for a new American century, and I'm thinking about who is it that does the wrong thing. I looked at the list of most of the people, or maybe many of the people, if not most of the people, who were part of the project for a new American century. These are the people who convinced Americans that they had to go to war in Iraq, et cetera, and have done everything since. And I noticed that so many of them are Israelis or Israel connected. How big a part you think does Israel play in all of this situation that we were just talking about with all these unnecessary wars?
Too big a part. But, you know, that if we go back to the history of that, we'd be here for the whole of the rest of your program and probably this week and next week, all put together. No, but I'm serious. And I find myself somewhat diverted from the central point, which is the point that we have to make, is if we read and read and read, and if we talk to one another across international borders, okay, we will inevitably come to the conclusion that we, the people who are accepting my mother's idea that you should do the right thing, that we are fighting an existential battle for the soul of the human race. And the New American Century people and the Donald Trumps of this world and so and the Netanyahus, in fact, the whole of the state of Israel, because even the babies have been propagandized into believing that they're superior in some way to everybody else on earth, because Wahey told them or some god told them that they were chosen. And so they have to go and murder people, like the genocide of the Palestinian people that we're all having to fight against so hard. And that is the first battle we absolutely must win. We have to stop the genocide of the Palestinian people. That's first and foremost, because whatever happens to them, willy-nilly will happen to us. Russian people, English people, American people, because that crime is being perpetrated by people who think they are superior to us. Very Paul Wolfowitz, okay? Very New American Century. So the only way that we can prevent this happening is to speak up, and thank you for having me on your program, to speak to all my brothers and sisters in Russia. And we have to stand shoulder to shoulder with USB. Who's USB? It's dockyard workers in Italy. They're our brothers and sisters. We have to resurrect the unions all over the world so that the working class becomes a real force for good with our hearts and our souls and our voices. And yeah. Thank you for helping in this.
No. I have so much respect for you. And the more I hear from you and the more I've gotten to study you, the more respect I've had, which makes me think, how did you come to this? You know, it's kind of courageous to do what you do. And today, a lot of people are closer to your ideology. But there was a time when you first started doing this where people must have thought you were crazy. And I wouldn't be surprised if it hurt you contractually or from a business standpoint or from an enterprise standpoint. Has it? What was it like for you to take this stand?
Well, you're talking now about Israel, because I went in 2006, yeah, sort of by mistake, because I'd agreed to do a gig in Israel. And then the conversation started. And eventually I had the important conversation, which was with a man called Omar Barghouti, who was part of the beginning of the BDS movement in Palestine, part of the resistance against the occupation and genocide that was going. So, yeah, have I paid a price? Yeah, of course I have, but it's nothing compared with the price that my brothers and sisters in Palestine have paid. And was I shunned a bit? Yeah. Would they not? Did they refuse to let me stay in hotels in, you know, Buenos Aires and Montevideo? Yeah, they did.
Really?
And you go, what? Are you? Yes, really. And that's the Israeli lobby. It has very long reaches, you know, and which is very sad, because the ideology behind the state of Israel is entirely wrong. Creating a state that is ethno-supremacist is what my mother would call doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Sadly. And I'm very sad for the Israelis. I remember the propaganda just after the war where it was, oh, there are a bunch of people in khaki shorts rolling their sleeves up and tilling the land, turning the desert into arable and creating a wonderful democratic state. It was always a filthy lie.
Yes.
And it still is, sadly. But sadly, if you get a child young enough, you can teach them almost anything. You know, one other thing, I quote my mother once more. This was actually, I quoted her in a film I made years ago. It never came out. It was called Swaddle. And it's a young man, an actor, playing me, and he's typing. And the typewriter goes, I remember one day my mother saying to me, of course, darling, if the Germans had won the war, they would have killed me because I was a communist. But they would probably have kept you alive and brought you up as a good little Nazi. Scared the shit out of me. Still does. That is the predicament of our poor friends in Israel. Yeah. They have been brought up as good little Nazis. So they run around in their silly hats shouting, kill the Arabs, because they're good little Nazis. And it's a real shame for them. And I hope that we manage to take them by the hand and lead them back into the human race. And all the leaders of the European Union who are rattling their sabers at Russia. It's insane.
Yeah.
I often say to people, do you know who the Russian people are? They won the Second World War. For God's sake, 25 million of them died, saving the world for us. And you want to have a war with them?
It's crazy.
Wow.
Did you ever...
How dumb.
Did you ever
this
think...
This is one of the things Tucker Carlson and I agree upon. You know, he made a great documentary after visiting Russia. And actually, in the conversation we had last week, he said, yeah, this is a very civilized people. So good on you.
Yeah, he and I talk about this from time to time. We text each other regularly, and I share some of my ideas about things now that I'm half based here in Moscow, and I find it absolutely fascinating. I've learned so much. But did you ever think that in your lifetime you would actually see or watch NATO and the United States and the country you're from bombing Russia? Like, literally, using deep strikes and bombing Russia, hitting apartment buildings and hitting refineries and hitting railroad bridges and that kind of thing. Doesn't that sound crazy? But it's going on every day.
No, of course not. No, of course not. You know, because I'm a war baby, maybe not, but just after the war in England, we had a socialist government. And suddenly we had the National Health Service, and suddenly we had free education for everybody, and suddenly blah, blah, blah. And I kind of believed in this new experiment. It started in June, 25th of June, I think, 1945 in San Francisco, the 51 Articles of the Charter of the United Nations. And then it was reinforced in Paris 3 years later, December the 10th, 1948, the signing of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I believe in that stuff, and I still do now. And I thought we all did. You know, I wrote a song called Goodbye Blue Sky on an album I wrote in 1979 called The Wall. And it goes, did we ever wonder why we had to run for shelter when the promise of a brave new world unfurled beneath the clear blue sky? I, like many of my generation, thought that the Second World War and the starting of the United Nations was going to be the end of war, the end of slaughter. My father was killed February the 18th, 1944, at Aprilia near the Anzio Bridge in Italy. So I've, you know, I've paid my dues. I know what it feels like to lose a family member to perpetual war. And for what? For the profit of a ruling elite in California at Raytheon or Elbit Systems in Bristol? No, human beings are worth more than that, and we should have learned more than this. So, unfortunately, we have allowed usury, the lending of money for profit, into our national, political, and particularly political systems, and particularly in the United States, where if you're Miriam Adelson or anybody else with a few quid, you can buy Congress. You can buy the presidency of the United States. Donald Trump is a paid-for puppet. And yet he's the most powerful man on earth with his finger on that red button. Frightens the life out of me. All right? That's why we all have to speak out, whatever it costs us. Doesn't matter if you have to move to, like Afshin, who worked for RT, he's now living in Dubai. Yeah. If you have to move and to go and live somewhere else, so be it. You cannot be quiet. Thank you, Alistair Crook. I've been listening to his stuff for years and years, and I read everything that I can. You know,
yeah, guys.
So
guys,
yeah. I'll shut up. Guys, I'm like him, to shout.
No, you're not, and you're an incredible man. You really are, and I've followed you for a long time. And I'm telling you, it's nice to hear it because when I talk to you, I don't get a sense that you're just stating it. You're feeling it. You really get it. You really want. You really desire the change that you speak of. I wonder. Maybe we should end on this. What? How do you, you know, we ain't getting any younger, man. And I think sometimes, will my kids have a better world? Will
speak for yourself.
Yeah? Oh, Jesus. Okay, I'm old.
No, go on.
You look great. Yeah, you do. You got. In fact, I was just looking at you on camera and I was saying, it must be the lighting because he looks too damn young. Just kidding. Do you foresee?
I'm only 82, for F's sake. Anyway, what do you want to hear? What do you want to finish on? Mate?
I want to finish.
I'm interested.
I want to finish on whether my granddaughter Serena and my kids, you know, Ricky and Robbie and Remy and Savannah, are going to end up with a place that's better than the crap that we gave them. What are your prospects for hope looking forward?
They definitely won't end up with it anywhere where they can live a decent life unless we all get together and work towards that. Because, first of all, we have to stop having wars. We can't afford it. We need to address climate change properly without listening to Big Oil, who say it's all rubbish, or Donald Trump, who agrees with Big Oil. OK, and we have to understand that the only thing that can save this planet is cooperation with all our brothers and sisters from different lands. That's the only way we can do it. We have to stop supporting Nicolas Farage and Tom Robinson, those Nazis in England, trying to stop immigration. Or you know what's what causes it is that we don't cooperate one with another to solve the important problems, whether they're commercial or economic or climate. Because if we don't act together, it ain't going to happen. And I'm really worried about your grandkids. I feel quite emotional about it. I know people with young children now. And it breaks my heart to think of the world that they're going to have to grow up in. You know, and if I had my phone with me, I'd go, we need to get rid of these things. Mm. This is dopamine. This is a carrier of dopamine. Every time you put that to your ear or go onto Instagram, I wipe Instagram at least 3 times a week. I delete the app. Because I realized a few years ago, oh, my God, if I start looking at baby deer trapped in barbed wire, I can be there for hour after hour after hour. Well, they know that. That's why they put the baby deer trapped in barbed wire on there. It's to trap you into that. You have to throw it away or put it away or only use it to make a phone call or something. I know I'm preaching, but I care about your grandchildren. And I care about every Russian grandchild and every Chinese grandchild. Mm. You know, I deeply care about them. And unless we band together, they're f***ed.
Yeah. Roger Waters.
If I may use that word.
Well, you just did.
They are, man. This
Roger
is so
Waters.
Important.
Yeah, it is.
This war, the war is insane, obviously. And so's the war in Ukraine. It should have all been over with the Minsk Accords.
Yeah.
This is 12 years since Maidan, since John McCain went and organized that revolution, so-called, and murdered a few people and got rid of the elected government and put in the Banderites. Nazis, they're just Nazis, and we know that. So, yeah, It's that's another story, and it's a long story, and I shouldn't have brought it up.
No, we all watched it.
The fact that Russians and Ukraine.
Yeah, too many people don't
the
know.
The fact that young men and middle-aged.
Finish, please.
Well, I know. Well, we sent a moron in at the end of February, or was it March or April, 2022. His name was Boris Johnson. Who's the stupidest man who's ever been in government in England? Boris Johnson. Send him to the Ukraine to tell them that they're not allowed to make peace. It was all signed and sealed in Istanbul, and they threw it out the window. Mm-hmm. And think of all the children and grandchildren, all the men on both sides who've been killed since then. Why? Huh?
Yeah.
Money. Mm. That's all. So we have to open our eyes. Do not listen to the politician. Do not listen to Macron or Starmer. He's gone. Or the new Labour leader. He's a f***er as well. No, you can't listen to any of them. You have to listen to Afshin and Rick and me when we tell you you've got to start talking to your neighbours and cooperating one with another to save this, our home, this tiny, vulnerable dot in the middle of a lot of nothing, planet Earth.
Well stated. Roger Waters. A legend in so many ways, but most of all for what's in his heart. I thank you, Roger, for joining us once again. It's always such a pleasure to see you, my friend. One day we'll have to share a cup of coffee or something. I would love to do that.
Yeah, or something stronger. So would I.
God bless you, and we'll talk to you again. Roger Waters joining us today. And wow, what a wonderful conversation. And so heartfelt, right? I mean... 82? Wow, I don't see it. Thank God. That's it from us. Thanks for being with us, by the way. You can watch us on the socials. I know, I hate some of them. I hate YouTube, but I'm there. And you can see me there all over the place. Huge on X. They're a little better. We're on Spotify. I love BitChute. Check out BitChute. They're really good. BitChute.com. They vow to not demonetize, make stuff disappear, get rid of you because they don't like your anti-war opinions or any of that stuff. So I put all my stuff there because someday it might be the only place where I can find it. That's BitChute.com, by the way. Thanks for being with us. Thank you so much for letting us into your homes. And we'll be looking for you next time.